This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. This summer, while we shiver in multiplex air conditioning and snack on snow caps, a familiar cast of characters comes to town. Some are trying to save the world.
This is John Connor. If you're listening to this, you are the Resistance.
Some have world-saving thrust upon them.
You're the chosen one, Harry.
And some are simply trying to make it home in time for a good meal.
I'm Julia Child. Bon appetit.
And this weekend, one of the most beloved characters in all the galaxy returns to the big screen just in time to kick a little Romulan butt.
My name is James Tiberius Kirk.
That's right. Star Trek is back, and it heads to the big screen tonight at midnight. Director J.J. Abrams, who's been able to put the chic in geek in a number of sci-fi flavored, character-driven pieces that you might have heard of, Lost, has taken the Federation back to hipness, and he will join us in a few minutes. And we want to hear from you. What summer movie are you most looking forward to? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Lisa Kennedy is the film critic for the Denver Post and joins us now from a studio in Denver. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Well, thank you, Neil. It's good to be here.
And I know, all right, we're going to talk to J.J. Abrams a little bit later, but you've seen Star Trek. Please tell me this is terrific.
You know what? You twisted my arm. It's terrific.
Oh, great.
I just thought it was so much fun. Fun.
Fun. A return to the...
I know, a word that critics are often evidently allergic to, or at least people imagine we are.
Well, especially when they're talking about movies when, you know, if they titled it another way, it'd be Star Trek 11.
I know. Wasn't that frightening? I was like, oh, what did I miss?
And it's been a long time since this franchise has seen the big screen, and for good reasons. It was a little tired.
It was tired. It needed a little, like, a revitalization. And I think, of course, the funny way to do that is not to take it into its future, but to take it into its past in a lot of ways. And that's been really fun. And I think that was the worry, right, is that, oh, this is such a beloved group of, such a beloved cast. Can this work? And it rocks. It's just so, it's moving. It's got the action that people love, but it's also just funny. I mean, you know, I always thought that cast was really pretty amusing and sort of bemused by its mission, its five-year ongoing mission. And I think, you know, J.J. Abrams really pulls off something so lovely because you always want these things to be in the spirit of the original, and that's the trick, right?
So. Right. Well, what summer movies are you looking forward to? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. Andy joins us on the line from Milwaukee.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Oh, fantastic movie. Absolutely the best Star Trek in like 27 years, whatever Wrath of Khan was. I can't give it to him. I can't say it's number one, but I got to tell you, he achieved the impossible. He made an odd-numbered movie come off like an even-numbered movie. And, you know, every Trekkie knows what I'm talking about when I say that. I saw a free screening Tuesday in Milwaukee, and I got to tell you, he did some things and he pulled some stuff in there that I think some people could be really ticked off about, but he pulled it off with such panache, such flair. It's like the Casino Royale of Star Trek. He boils all the characters down to their essences, and he creates just a compelling story about the characters. And he's, you know, he's really free from all this other stuff that dragged down the series over all this time. It was thrilling, and I think it's going to do really well, and people are going to love it.
And much easier to take, you would think, as an old fan myself, as you can probably tell, much easier to take this recreation of the original cast than. I don't have the energy to go through a new Star Trek world.
Well, and, you know, it's interesting because I think that what he did is he kind of combined the best of both worlds, you know, to borrow a title. But I think that he did a really good job of, you know, going back to the beginning. I think, you know, there was always room for invention in the series. But, you know, I think what people wanted to see is they wanted to see what they'd missed for so long. And, you know, quite frankly, I mean, I don't think there's anyone who didn't feel like the second these characters are introduced on the screen that it didn't feel, I mean, it did feel like it was just watching the regular cast, who, you know, the characters, and there was no adjustment. It was as if, you know, everything just fit into place just perfectly. I don't know how he did it.
Andy, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Sure. Absolutely.
Bye-bye. And we have to express some disappointment. Something's come up in the schedule. J.J. Abrams is not going to be able to be with us this afternoon, and we apologize for that. But I'm sure he'll return and give us a full hour some other time when we can guilt trip him into it. But in any case, if he's capable of being guilt tripped, we'll have to see about that. Lisa Kennedy, as we look ahead to some of the other movies, this is, I had not realized till I read your piece in the Denver Post, how programmed this summer is and counter-programmed. Make sure that your film doesn't come out the same week as somebody else's film.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, because these are like behemoths, and you try to move out of the way of behemoths so you don't get squashed. And they really do sort of bow down to each other and create space in the season. And then the counter-programming that we're talking about is really, you know, there's romantic comedies this summer to kind of balance some of the action flicks that one always assumes women audiences aren't drawn to. I don't think that's always the case. But there's a lot more of that this summer. And then, you know, and then independent films seem a little bit aggressive this summer, too, which is a nice thing because it's a pretty good slate. So, yeah, there's always, like, moving around and sort of trying to get out of the way of things like, you know, Wolverine or Star Trek. You don't want to be opening the same weekend as Star Trek.
Well, unless you're something very different, like one of those independent movies you're talking about.
Right, exactly. And there's some lovely ones.
Like?
The tricky thing in Denver is that I think that some of the things that I would say are opening this weekend have already opened in New York and L.A., so you get a little confounded by that. But there's the Rudo y Cursi film with Gael Garcia Bernal and Diego Luna reunited. And it's very funny. It's about these two brothers who are soccer players who leave a village in Mexico to go to Mexico City and play for soccer teams. And it's just a sweet comedy, but smart about the sort of internal in Mexico sort of traveling, you mm-hmm. know, migrations that happen. And I think that's really, it's just lovely because those guys are really cute and funny. So that's one, certainly.
As good as Sin Nombre?
So different than Sin Nombre. It's a comedy. So no, I don't want to say it's as good as, because Sin Nombre is sort of, I mean, it's extraordinary.
Yeah,
so a very different kind of migration. I think you're absolutely right. That Sin Nombre is a great film.
Let's get another caller on the line. Tony's calling from Cincinnati.
Hi, yeah, I'm also looking forward to the new Star Trek. Even though they're not doing midnight showings, they're doing 7 and 9 o'clock showings, which kind of ruin the spirit of the midnight show. But I'm also looking forward to the new Harry Potter. That's going to be, I'm looking forward to seeing the end of that chapter on the moving to the end of that story on the big screen. It's going to be a lot of fun.
And we have an email from that from Kayla in Des Moines. I'm looking forward to the newest Harry Potter movie, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. Oh, yes, I will be one of those silly 20-somethings crammed into the theater with all the little kids. I can't wait. That's one drawback to seeing the Harry Potter movies, unless you go really early in the day on a weekday, Tony.
I'm a 40-something, and I'll be there midnight because, you know, good writing's good writing. I don't care who it's for. You know, my only concern is my kids are about 5 years behind it, so as it gets more intense, I have to wait and slowly introduce. They've only seen the first one so far.
All right. Well, it's going to be you've got something to look forward to.
Well, and they get Pixar's Up, which is going to be amazing.
Pixar's Up. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. But, Tony, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You went through in your piece in the Denver Post, you know, the upside and downside of these. It seems that the Harry Potter movie is, well, how could it possibly go wrong? This franchise has been, well, in the hands of different directors, it has prospered.
It's prospered, and I think it's just been so brilliantly consistent about what it achieved. So each of those films, they're never sort of, you know, they're good. They're maybe not always extraordinary, but they're always really good and solid. And I think the interesting thing that Tony just said that I think is very true is that they're also getting darker. And so this sort of notion that you're competing with little kids at the theater makes me worried about who those little kids' parents are, because some of this stuff is really quite frightening. But Harry Potter's a great series. I mean, I think it's just been so consistently smart about magic and muggles and all the challenges thereof.
Our caller also mentioned the new Pixar movie, Up. It's about a 78-year-old man and an 8-year-old boy who go on a journey together. Here they are, trudging along together.
Russell, if you don't hurry up, the tigers will eat you.
There are no tigers in South America. Zoology.
Ah, for the love of Pete. Go on into the bushes and do your business.
Okay, here, hold my stuff.
And the voice of the curmudgeon, of course, Ed Asner. High hopes for Up, right? Pixar has never gone wrong.
They never go wrong. And you know what I love? I feel like sort of saying, Mr. Grant.
Mr. Grant.
Mr. regret. But I also like the idea. I mean, not only the title maybe says it all. It's like Up, you know, after Wall-E, which was fun on the back end, but pretty darn dystopian on the front end. It's, you know, it's nice to have something that looks like it's just going to be lovely. And I love that kind of relationship between the sort of, you know, quasi-grandparent and the grandkid. And Esther's got a great voice for this. I'm just really looking forward to it. And it looks beautiful.
And this is going to be in 3D, as so many pictures are these
days.
Oh, boy.
Absolutely. 3D seems to be here to really stay. I mean, people are saying really quite interesting things, I think, about where that technology's headed. And this is not some sort of, like, freak occurrence any longer. This is how we're going to see a lot of films. And they'll probably figure out how to do it without any glasses, even though the new glasses are kind of Ray-Ban-y, which I love.
They're pretty cool. But this is one thing we can get in the theater, at least given the technology now, we cannot get at home. And, well, prices being what they are, the economy being what it is, theaters have to differentiate themselves.
Precisely. I think this is sort of one of these moments where you really are looking for quote-unquote event films. You know, event film used to just mean tentpole, big film, lots of action. But I really think it means something like, what would make you shell out the dough to take your kids, feed your kids, and watch a film? And it's an event. That's why IMAX films are such a big deal, I think. That's why these 3D films are so amazing. That's why 3D IMAX is even more amazing.
Even more amazing.
It's because it has to be. It has to be big for people, I think. It has to feel like something.
Here's an email we have from Brian in Syracuse, New York. G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra. I want to have all my comic books back and toys. It's going to be so much fun. Is Brian going to be disappointed?
Well, I don't know. He had those toys and he has those comic books. Maybe he won't be. He's a fan. I have my doubts. I love Channing Tatum, who's one of the characters in it. I think he's a really interesting, young, up-and-coming actor. But right after Transformers, I don't know if I'm going to be ready for another film that seems based on something that's even more, you know, even further back in terms of its juice than the Transformer toys. So I think that diminished expectations seem to allow for more enjoyment in the summer. So I'm worried about him. I'm not too worried about me. I'll go and I'll be like, holy cow, this is almost good.
It's more than Romulans and starships on the big screen this summer. Lisa Kennedy, film critic for the Denver Post, is helping us preview what's worth our $9 and which movies you might be better off waiting for on DVD or on demand. What summer movie are you most looking forward to? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Last weekend, Wolverine hacked his way to an $85 million haul on opening weekend. Tomorrow, or midnight tonight, some places, Star Trek goes boldly back into theaters. Then Angels and Demons opens. The next Terminator, Up. There's comedy, romance, indie flicks, plenty of action to keep you busy this summer. You'll laugh, you'll cry. What movie are you most looking forward to and why? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Lisa Kennedy is with us, film critic for the Denver Post. And let's see if we can go now to Stacy. Stacy calling from Glen Carbon in Illinois.
Hey, how you doing, Neil?
I'm very well, thank you.
Hey, I'm really looking forward to The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3.
The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, this is an action Meller set in the city of New York where a subway train is taken hostage. And, Lisa Kennedy, you know as well as I do, it's a remake of a terrific movie.
Yeah, it really is from the 70s. But I think that the cast says a lot. Certainly, Tony Scott loves Denzel Washington. That's one of the really fundamental relationships in film culture, right? These two guys have worked together an awful lot. And so I think that they're going to have a great deal of fun. And John Travolta he's the villain in this. He loves being a baddie. So I think that, you know, there are a lot of people who don't know that film. And what they'll do is they'll go see this, and then they'll be like, what was that 70s film? And it'll have a revitalized life, too.
And the book was also very good, the original book, The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, that it came from. Stacy, what are you interested in it for?
I'm interested in seeing how they can beat the performance of Walter Matthau and Bill Cobb. I tell you what, if they can pull that off, they're going to pull off a major leap. It's almost like remaking The Godfather. Some things you just don't touch. when you remake this movie, you're going to be really doing something. And I would recommend anybody see the original if they get a chance, either before or after. I'm really looking forward to it. I like Denzel Washington. I like John Travolta. But I tell you, the performances of those original players just in Hector Elizondo and Walter Matthau and Bill Cobb, who's still with us, it's going to be phenomenal. And I'd be surprised to see if maybe these guys can reprise their roles, because we still have Jerry Stiller, we still have Hefe Elizondo, and we still have Bill Cobbs. And Bill Cobbs has been in the movie forever.
I'm not sure they can afford Cobbs for this movie, but...
You're probably right. But still, you know, and I know Walter Matthau, you know, God rest his soul, he's not with us anymore. But, you know, his performance was just out there. And, I mean, just being a New Yorker myself, I'm telling you, I'm really looking forward to it. The only thing that's going to beat me being in the theater on opening day is my son's wedding. Well, other than that, the very next day, I'm there.
Okay. Get your son to move the ceremony. It's no big deal. Anyway, Stacey, thanks very much for the phone call. Okay. Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go next to, this is Scott. Scott with us from Oswego, New York.
Hi there, Neil. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, thank you.
A couple of things, actually. The first of which, you were discussing programming and counter-programming being so critical in the summer season. There was an interesting thing that I read online earlier today. Apparently, future summers being booked out, you know, years in advance, almost like wedding reception halls have to be. Apparently now it looks like in 2011, two comic book movies might be coming into conflict with one another. The Green Lantern and Thor could conceivably be opening and competing against each other for the same audience on the same day.
Well, I think they'll probably figure out a way, Lisa Kennedy, to move one of them around, probably by sticking their fist into a lantern and saying, by darkest day and blackest night. Anyway, they may figure this out.
I think they may figure it out. And guess what? What's cool about that is we just started talking about it. It's 2011. They should have them up against each other. So we're going, what will happen? What will happen for another, like, 2 years? It's pretty genius, I think.
It's great cross-promotion. And on that note,
exactly.
Actually... with regard to Star Trek, comic book tie-ins are now being used almost as prequel setups, where Kurtzman and Orci, the guys that wrote the screenplay for Star Trek, wrote a story that was adapted into a four-issue miniseries that sets up the events that start the movie. So some of the critics' responses that I've heard to the film, things that were points of confusion about the movie
are settled in this well, yesterday was New Comics Day, so I missed it, Scott. I'll have to pick it up next year.
Yeah, it's called Countdown, and it sets everything up. Last thing, I know I'm eating up your time. A smaller film this summer that I'm really jazzed about is called Moon, with Sam Rockwell and Kevin Spacey in almost a HAL 9000 sort of role. And I was wondering, Ms. Kennedy, if you had had a chance to screen this or if you knew anything about it.
Opens July 3rd in Denver.
Yeah, and it is. I did see it, and I like it very much. Duncan Jones has done. This is his first film, a British director, and it has that old school sci-fi sort of psychological challenge, you know, energy going on, and it's pretty moving and kind of very minimal, and you know, and I think you're absolutely right to mention HAL 9000 because it's related to, I mean, it does feel like 2001 Space Odyssey. There's like a lot going on in it. It's Sam Rockwell, such a fine actor, so there's a lot of that kind of existential wrinkles. I mean, those sort of existential wrinkles, I think, that make things so compelling for science fiction as a great kind of fable of human behavior. It is the and to talk about counter programming, though, that is such the opposite of all the sort of super action driven special effects films that are going to be out this summer. It's a nice, quiet, smart, compelling film.
Scott, thanks very much.
Enough Rockwell featuring in Iron Man 2 next summer, so you do the quiet film so you can do the big ones.
Oh, yeah, so you can do the big ones, exactly.
Scott, thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go next to, this is Tom. Tom with us from Orlando.
Hi, Neil. My wife and I are both serious Trekkies, and we are refusing to go to Star Trek this weekend because we have heard so much good about it. We want to prolong that moment. We don't want it to go by too fast. And so we actually had a long discussion last night. Should we go Thursday? No. Saturday? No. Let's go middle of the week next week.
Middle of the week next. It's like waiting for the director's cut, so it'll be longer.
Exactly. Although not the original Star Trek the motion picture. No one needed that to be long.
No. Well, I think that approach to the docking station took 2 weeks.
Oh, golly. I actually had a child during that.
Well, see,
anyway, thank you.
More exciting picture than we thought. Tom, thanks very much for the call. Let's see if we can go next to Mark. Mark with us in Berkeley.
I am looking forward to sort of an adult movie that I hope will appeal to kids, too. It's called Little Ashes, and it's about the relationship between the painter Salvador Dali in the 20s and the poet Federico Garcia Lorca, but it stars the vampire from Twilight as Dali.
Really? I've not heard of this movie. Lisa, is this new to you?
It's not new to me, but I don't know a lot about it, that's for sure. It doesn't open for a little while here, so.
Have you seen it, Mark?
No, it's coming out here in June, I believe.
And what makes you attracted to it?
Well, I've always been a fan of the poet Federico Garcia Lorca. He's, you know, one of the great modern poets. I don't know if he's modernist, but from Spain. And so the idea of going to Madrid in the 20s and seeing the artists there just seems very romantic and interesting. And also I think it's groundbreaking because it's about the relationship between Dali and Lorca, and Lorca was famous for being gay.
Okay, all right, Mark.
And he also stood up to Franco, more or less.
And left. Mark, thanks very much. Let's see if we can go next to Matthew. Matthew with us from Clawson in Michigan.
Hi.
Go ahead, Matthew.
I'm really looking forward to the two movies, actually. One's called District 9, and it's the new Peter Jackson film.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is just called 9, and it's from Tim Burton.
So you'll like anything with 9 in the title.
Yeah. Telling that to the person.
I didn't know there was a new Tim Burton movie coming out this summer, Lisa.
Yeah, I don't. I think it may have gotten pushed back. I'm not convinced it's in the summer any longer. I'm fairly certain it isn't, actually. I think it's been moved into the fall.
I saw a preview for it, when I went and saw Wolverine, so mm-hmm, I don't really know if it's this summer, but...
I know. It could be next summer, I tell you. No, I don't think it is next summer. I think it's in the fall, though.
Our crack research staff has just informed us it's due out September 9th, so 9-9.
Mm-hmm. Ah.
Thanks very much, Matthew.
All right, thank you.
Here's a Twitter user, Mike Beebe, who sent us this tweet. Terminator, Harry Potter, G.I. Joe, Transformers, Star Trek, Wolverine, Night at the Museum 2 up. Man, am I glad to have a 12-year-old son. It is a great excuse to watch everything go blow up real good.
Precisely. It's like, hey, I'm here with a kid. I borrow kids for my films.
Let's see if we can get to Holly. Holly with us from Louisville.
Hi.
Hi, Holly.
How you doing?
Very well, thank you.
I just wanted to put a plug in there for Johnny Depp's new film, Public Enemies. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
And this is the John Dillinger story. Of course, John Dillinger ended his life coming out of a movie. This is a great Hollywood story, Lisa Kennedy.
I know, a summer blockbuster, I think, is what he came out of. No. yeah, it is a great... And, you know, the other thing is, it's Michael Mann's the director.
The name of the picture was Manhattan Melodrama. But anyway, go ahead.
Michael Mann was the director, and you know he's done some really amazing things with male actors. I think that he really gets a kind of masculinity, Mr. You know, creator sort of Miami Vice, and then you know Collateral with Jamie Foxx and Tom Cruise, Heat with Robert De Niro and Pacino. I just think that the Johnny Depp, if there's a movie that is going to have legs into the Oscar season, this may be one of them, because that guy can get great performances. And Johnny Depp's so fascinating, but it looks fun, and they really are engaged with the story of Dillinger and the sort of charming outlaw.
There is also, and thanks very much for the call, Holly, sure. There is also, if you're talking about male actors and action and directors, Inglourious Basterds, the new Quentin Tarantino movie.
I know. It seems like such a minefield. It's Brad Pitt is the leader of a unit, a clandestine unit of Jewish soldiers that goes behind enemy lines in Germany to kill Nazis. And so you're kind of wondering, it's like a Dirty Dozens film meets, and I think people have said something along these lines. I'm not going to say Schindler's List, but this sort of notion that you're going to do something about an action film that features the Holocaust seems like, you know, fairly minefield territory.
Could be tricky stuff.
It could be tricky stuff. I have a lot of confidence in Quentin Tarantino because he understands how movies work on us. And his movies are almost always about movies. Maybe he can figure this out. I just think it's hard to make a movie about the Holocaust that isn't about the Holocaust, as opposed to movies about the Holocaust in some way. So I'm intrigued. And I do think that, you know, Brad Pitt can be very, very good and very funny. So we'll see.
The movie I'm looking forward to, writes Odette in Lakefield, Ontario, Canada. The movie I'm looking forward to this summer is Julie and Julia. I love the book, and I'm eager to see all that scrumptious food. I've never gone beyond Julia's onion soup, vichyssoise, and beef bourguignon, so I'm curious to see Julie contend with real calf's foot when she makes calf's foot jelly, according to Julia, and to see Meryl Streep as Julia Child. What a treat. And she said she loved the book. Well, this is actually two books.
Exactly. One is the autobiography that Julia Child made. Nora Ephron adapted this to the two books. One is the autobiography that Julia Child wrote. The other is Julie, right? Now, that's the part I get confused about because I haven't read the book. I don't. Mm-hmm. You know, I tend to read them kind of after I see a movie, if only because if you do it too soon, you're a little bit like looking at something and going, but it's not as good, which is the last thing I think people want to hear from us. Is that it's not as good as the book. It's so obvious.
Yeah. Go read the book. But this is that combination of that great book, and we've had the author on the show, talking about her life as she went through making every single one of Julia Child's recipes. But there's a great story you tell in your column about Meryl Streep auditioning for the part.
Oh, yeah, I love that. Because it wasn't really even an audition. I think that she and Nora Ephron were coming out of the same play, and I think they had one of those conversations that friends can have, or like, you know, acquaintances can have, which is just like, so what are you up to? And Nora Ephron saying, oh, I'm working on this movie about Julia Child. And Meryl Streep is just like, bon appetit, you know, to her. And Nora Ephron's like, you know, hits her head and is just like, hello, this is the perfect person. And I think that that just is such a funny kismet in a way. And it's just a beautiful story. And who could not? I mean, Meryl Streep is so good these days that, you know, that's enough of a reason to go. And she's become the, like, summer box office queen.
I was just
going to
say that. Who would expect that Meryl Streep would be the queen of the summer blockbuster?
It's the craziest thing, but it's true. And it's amazing. It's like Mamma Mia last year, the year before, Devil Wears Prada. Julia Child's going to be one of the biggest stars of the summer. That's amazing. Lisa, that's a pretty impressive thing.
Lisa Kennedy is a film critic for the Denver Post with us from a studio in Denver. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Chris on the line. Chris calling from San Jose.
Oh, hi, Neil. I'm interested in a movie called Whatever Works, Woody Allen film with Larry David.
The prodigal son returns, Lisa.
Right.
He does indeed.
Larry David plays a brilliant string theorist.
But this is set for the first time in, what, 5 years, a Woody Allen movie set in the United States.
Right, in New York City.
What an odd place for Woody to pick.
Yeah. And I guess I'm really looking forward to seeing Larry David in I suppose this is a serious role, but I'm not sure.
You know, I think, well, it's a comedic role, I think, in that sort of romantic comedy way that Woody Allen does those things. But I think that the funny thing about it, I like one of these Larry David stories, is that he was reading the script, having been pitched to be this character, Boris, this cranky string theorist that you're talking about. And he reads this beginning. He's like, oh, good, I'm in it. And then he sort of reads a little bit further. He's like, oh, this guy's still in it. And then he reads the last page. He's like, oh, my God, I'm the guy. And I just think that's such a funny story. I love that story. I think it's really quite amusing.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
All right, Chris.
Yeah, it looks like it'll be fun.
Thanks
yeah.
very much. Let's see if we can go next to this is Kim. Kim with us from Tenasket in Washington.
Hi.
Hi, Kim.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
Hi, I'm looking forward to seeing the movie Angels and Demons.
Angels and Demons. This is I guess it's sort of a prequel to
Da Vinci Code.
To the Da Vinci Code, which came out a couple of years ago. We have a clip of this movie where a mysterious canister of antimatter is discovered missing. And what is antimatter?
It's a way of studying the origins of the universe. To try to isolate what some people call the God particle. But there are implications for energy
the
research.
God particle?
What we call it isn't important. It's what gives all matter mass, the thing without which we could not exist.
You're talking about the moment of creation.
Yes, in a way I am.
So nothing important being discussed in this picture at all.
Yeah, the book was great. Lots of plot twists and turns, and it was very exciting. And since it's a Ron Howard film, I just think it's going to be great.
Lisa Kennedy, was I the only person who could detect an accent slipping in just that clip?
I thought that was a comedy. I'm sorry. I don't know which. It's terrible. I think it's one of those like clips that makes you giggle when it shouldn't and doesn't necessarily mean the movie won't be really quite fun.
And Ron Howard, when he's having a good time, is a wonderful director.
I think so, too, and he can be so good. It's just I actually thought he seemed a little tight with the Da Vinci Code. I found it a little, like, sort of airless for myself and long. Airless and long is not a good thing. But, you know, I know certain people liked it, and I think that he has at least a little bit more wiggle room because as much as people like Angels and Demons, I don't think it has, as a book, the same sort of how's he going to work it, is it going to be good, what is he going to screw up pressures. And I think that'll make him, I hope, like, enjoy himself because you're right. I think when he's, like, enjoying himself, we'll enjoy ourselves.
Thanks very much, Kim. Good luck.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. And finally, this email from Deanna in Kramer in Saskatoon. I am most excited about the indie film 100 Days of Summer. It puts a new twist on love, romance, loss, and yearning. I've seen the trailer. I've sent the trailer to all my friends, and I hope everybody checks it out. Well, Lisa Kennedy, we hope it makes it to Denver.
Oh, it'll definitely make it to Denver, and it'll probably be 500 days of summer
more than there are in Saskatoon anyway.
Exactly. It's like they're getting the like abridged version.
Lisa Kennedy, the film critic for the Denver Post, thanks very much for your time today.
Well, thank you, Neil.
Coming up, the secret on to how David beats Goliath. Quit playing by Goliath's rules. Malcolm Gladwell will join us. This is NPR News.